Hello, I'd like to welcome you once again to Mustard Seed Ministries audio presentation. This time, Facing the Giant Shark. When I was a boy, I lived in the Midwest. When I was 14, we left the Midwest and moved to another state. And I've always wondered what happened to those that I knew well when I was a boy. We used to run around together and we did many things, some good and some not so good. But every time I go back to my hometown, I relive these memories. One Saturday morning, it was a beautiful day. We were walking down a street near the home that I used to live in. And we stood adjacent to a home that I knew very well. It was the home of the McCorys. They were a vibrant, happy family, one that we had many adventures with. And as I looked at the house, a man came straight out the door. He was holding, as far as he could get from him, a can of garbage. And he walked with a man that was determined to get the job done as quick as possible. A man that had been interrupted by a very unpleasant task. He walked straight to the curb. And I said to him, "Do you know where the McCorys live?" He looked up at me, and it took him a moment to focus because his mind was somewhere else. And he shook his head, no, turned around abruptly, and headed for the house. I barely resisted the urge to go after him and to grab him and to ask him more about this family. As he slammed the door, I saw it was the end of this opportunity. As I kind of moved off to the side of the home, I looked back in the corner, and there stood the old garage. I remember that old garage well because there were some experiences with that garage that stuck in my memory because they were dramatic. All of a sudden, as the years kind of shed, I could look back and I saw a young boy trembling at the edge of the garage, at the back of the edge. He was white and he was shaking a little bit. I could tell he was trembling and his hands were sweaty and there was sweat on his forehead. And he was staring down at some object. I knew what that object was. It was an old wreck. Down below, as you looked at it, most of the windows were broken out except for the front window. It had jagged pieces of glass that looked like the mouth of a giant shark. There were no tires. It was all beat up. It was really a wreck. But it was stationed in a very opportune spot for us boys. We could jump off of the garage, it appeared, and land on the roof of that old wreck. And this boy was standing there looking down. Now that the wreck was looked terrible, menacing from below, but up above it was terrifying. And he looked at this, and it was the first time he'd ever attempted this. He'd saw others do it, but it was the first time for him. He asked, his brain said to his feet, "Jump!" But they wouldn't jump. And it seemed that his feet had more sense than his brain. He was about to turn around and head back and forget it, maybe try it another day. But as he turned around, his older brother and Pete McCorry were climbing onto the roof, and he would have had to slink past them with his tail between his legs, and he knew for sure that they would spread it around. So he stood there. Should he be a fool or should he be a coward? Like this young boy, we all face giant sharks in this life. None of us will pass through this life without some giant sharks and some scars to prove it. One of the things that kind of takes possession of us if we're not careful when we face these giant sharks is fear. There's a Swedish proverb that says, "Worry gives a small thing a big shadow." Eleanor Roosevelt once said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You must do the thing which you think you cannot do." Fear comes in actually two varieties. One of them is realized fear, and the other is unrealized fear. Realized fear is something that's happening in the here and now. It's happening before our eyes. And usually it's very legitimate fear. If you step off the curb and there's a giant Mack truck bearing down on you, fear is what gets the adrenaline and many other hormones moving in your body and starts a very quick, almost instantaneous sequence of events physically that allow you to dive for the curb, allow you to save your own life. It's a warning signal. If it's heeded properly, it can save us a great deal of pain. Unrealized fear is something completely different, because unrealized fear we cannot truly picture. We haven't seen it. We don't know what's going to happen. So we use our imagination. Our imagination is a great thing God has given us. And it's a great thing if it's used properly, legitimately. But when we try to imagine a situation in the future that may present us with fear or anxiety, we are at a very difficult place. Why? Because our imagination is so prone. It is so prone to fear. Fear can come into our imagination and almost take possession. Why? Because we really don't know what's going to happen. One of the reasons for this is life is bigger than us. We really can't control life very well. We have these illusions of control, but it's very difficult for us to control many of the events of life. Most of it, again, is simply an illusion. And if life is bigger than us, what are we to do? Well, we need something that is bigger in life to hang on to rescue us at times, to give us a refuge, a fortress that we can go to. What we focus on in life has a great deal to do with how we deal with the giant sharks. Our focus is a spotlight of our mind. If we would go out in a dark, still night with a spotlight of some type and turn it on, the only thing we would see is what is in that circle of light. Everything else around us, everything, would be outside of our vision. We would be focusing only on what's in that light. And our mind is very similar to this. Our thoughts and the way we look at things are like a spotlight. Our focus is like a spotlight. It's like a circle of light out there that we look at. We may go into a crowded room and we may see only one thing, but there are many things that are going on around us and we miss them because we cannot focus on everything at one time. So it's very important that we focus on the things that bring us the desired feelings and lead us to the desirable conclusions, like finding a secure place in this life to hang our hat. Therefore, since what we focus our thinking on has a great deal about how we feel, and of course, how we feel has a great deal of influence on how we act, it is important that we focus on the right things. Marcus Aurelius once said, "If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it. And this you have the power to revoke at any moment." Now, I'm not sure I agree fully with that, but I do to a great degree. I think what I would say is we can control considerably. We have considerable control over what we focus our minds on. It doesn't always feel that way, but we simply do have a choice. A couple examples. Suppose there is a man who is considering his financial situation, and let's say that he's really in trouble financially. It's all kind of closing in on him. His world is beginning to cave in as he has this financial crisis in his life. Now, if he focuses on that and he focuses on all the bills that aren't being paid, and yes, it's very difficult not to, but if he does, I will guarantee you that he will have a lot of stress, anxiety, and conflicting emotions as long as he focuses on those problems. Let's say that some lady was at a party somewhere, and there were some people there that were kind of brutish, and they were insensitive, and they said things to her that were just out of line, that caused a lot of or could have caused a lot of resentment in her. And as she thinks over this, as she thinks about these things, as she rolls them over her mind to see why they would do that to her, or what they meant by all of this, she starts experiencing a lot of conflicting emotions, a lot of pain and hurt. And the problem with this, as we focus on it, I mean, we were hurt once, but every time we refocus, we're hurt again, over and over and over again. What if we would focus on a lady that was in an office, and all the people were standing around and gossiping about one of the ladies, and most of it was rumors and no way to prove it was true or not true, but they were really attacking her character. And this lady stood up to the whole group and said, you know, this is not fair. She's not here. We don't really know if this is true. Come on, give her a break, cut her a little slack. She stood up for her. As we see things like that, we begin to experience better emotions because these are honorable things. These are good things. Suppose a man, we've read about these things, where the man walking down the street sees a fire and a family is trapped on the second story, and by some courageous action, he is able to get to them and get them out of that house at the risk of his own life. When we think about these things, we feel much better emotions. We begin to believe that there are people who will sacrifice for others, and all kinds of good feelings and good thoughts, and maybe even our desire to be the same way ourselves, leading the feelings lead to our actions. Back in the 1970s, a group of people took a survey that had to do with the concept of happiness. Now, we all want to be happy. So they took some time and they had a survey to see who are the happiest people and why are they happy. As they went through all of the different research throughout the world, most people attributed happiness to the things that we have here in the United States. They believed, because of all the material things we have and the freedoms we have, that we would be the most happy people on earth. So they shifted their research to the United States. And as they looked into the lives of people in the United States, they found that people weren't really all that happy. And this really threw them for a loop. And so they spent a lot of time talking together and trying to figure out, why isn't this true? Why would people intuitively think that people in the United States were happy when, in fact, they really were not that happy? Some of the speculation came from other philosophers and some from Christians. Peggy Noonan, she analyzed it and she said this, that the generations before this, and I believe it was in the 70s that this happened, the generations before this, they never really believed that you could find true happiness on earth. We were the only generation, starting in the 70s, that really believed that we could put it all together and find happiness in this life. The general opinion before this was that there were two lives. There was one here, and this life wasn't all that good. There was going to be a lot of suffering, a lot of giant sharks, a lot of things that we don't enjoy, that we would prefer not to experience. It is not heaven. It is earth. But there is a time coming in eternity that those who live this life properly, according to the Creator's will, they will find a place where happiness will never end, a place that we know as heaven or paradise. C.S. Lewis once said that those who live for eternity, whose focus is on the requirements for eternity, the way to find their way to eternity, the path to eternity, those people that do that will have this life also. They will gain eternity and they will gain in this life. Why? Because they're able to deal with this life much better. All the giant sharks and stuff, because they have eternal focus. Someday it will all be okay. Someday it'll all be right. But those who focus simply on this world, this earth, this life here, they seem to get neither. I've given this illustration before, but it's a good way to kind of get an idea of what eternity is all about. There's a bird, a small bird, that flies to the great Himalayan mountain range, all of the big mountains in the Himalayan range. Now, these are huge mountains, solid granite in many cases. And this bird goes to this mountain range and he wipes his beak on the rock surface, just wipes his beak on the rock surface every 100 years when he has wore the entire chain of mountains down to sea level. We will have experienced the first second of eternity. Why is it so very important to have an eternal focus? Because it lasts for such an infinite time. Life on this earth is only one beak wipe. That is, one beak wipe is 100 years. So what should we focus on to get us past the giant sharks in our life? Well, my friend, God has offered a great deal of promises to those who will trust Him with all of their heart. He asks if He's going to be our security, if He's going to be the thing that is bigger than life that we can grab hold of, the thing that is good and honorable, and that takes into account our worth, and in fact, gives us value beyond anything that we can find here on earth. If we are to do that, we must place ourselves completely into His hands. There must be a wholehearted commitment to serve Him and to walk with Him. And if we do that, then we can focus on something. Those of you who have done that, you have a lot to focus on that brings security. It's not that this life is going to be easy. You know, that's not what it's all about. Life needs to be a struggle in many ways. It's that stress and that anxiety and the struggle of life that makes us strong and gives us the sense of well-being and meaning and purpose that God has put there for us. But if we trust in God, what are some of the promises? Now, I'm just going to bring up a few. I would challenge you to get the Bible out and read all the promises, write them down as you go through the Word of God. You are going to be staggered at all the promises that God has given to those who will trust in Him. One of them, the Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. The Lord will watch over your coming and going, both now and forevermore. And another verse, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Another interpretation would be, He will direct your path. He will take you through life the way He wants you to go. Other ways we can find in the Bible are the opinions of the great men of the Bible. I say great because we honor them. No man is really great. Only God is great. But Paul said in Philippians, that we should focus on certain things. Here's his opinion. Here's his advice to us. Focus on that. Think on this, on the things that are true, the things that are worthy of reverence, the things that are honorable and good, those that are just and pure, lovely and lovable, kind and winsome and gracious. Fix your mind on these things. And I would challenge you again, my friend, as you do this, write down your feelings and write down your corresponding actions. And now let's go back to that young boy that was standing on the roof, trembling as he looked down at the old wreck, whose windshield looked like the mouth of a giant shark. And now he was being pushed by two others, his brother and Pete McCrory, and he didn't know what to do. All of a sudden, he found himself in midair. Finally, his legs had obeyed his brain. He looked at what path his jump would take him, and it took him right to the roof, over the top of that windshield, onto the roof. Of course, the roof gave under his weight, and he bounced off and ricocheted over that back window that was missing, onto the trunk, and he slid effortlessly to the ground. He had faced the giant shark, and he had won. This was not the first giant shark I faced, and for sure, it wasn't the last one. But then again, these giant sharks, they can develop us. Viktor Frankl said, what man actually needs is not a tensionless state, but rather the striving and struggling for some goal worthy of him. What he needs is not the discharge of tension at any cost, but the call of a potential meaning waiting to be fulfilled. I think what he was saying applies to Christians. We are here to, yes, suffer at times, rich suffering, suffering in the name of God, because it develops our character. M. Scott Peck once said, the truth is that our finest moments are most likely to occur when we are feeling deeply uncomfortable, unhappy, or unfulfilled. For it is only in such moments, propelled by our discomfort, that we are likely to step out of our ruts and start searching for different ways of truer answers. And in this case, that we would start searching for our Creator, the one who made us piece by piece, hair by hair. We start searching for that. And then, in the middle of all the confusion and the suffering and the pain of life, in the middle of all that as it swirls around us, we have a being that values us so much that he died for us. He cares for us so much that he will meet us anywhere, and he will help us to overcome the giant sharks in our life. I would say to you, learn to trust him with all of your heart, and you will find the key to eternal life. You will have the focus that will draw you into eternity, and you will be able to face every giant shark that comes your way.